As you get ready to expand your knowledge this offseason, make sure to save the date for USA Football's 2020 National Conference taking place February 21st through the 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky. This is more than just a clinic. It's your chance to hone your ability to teach proven and effective techniques while connecting with coaches across the country. Most coaches are satisfied if their regional clinic delivers just one or two nuggets of information. National Conference delivers a one-of-a-kind, high school-focused, live field experience that will give you an abundance of drills and techniques to improve your team's performance. Coaches can deep dive into both X's and O's and technique at classroom and chalk talk sessions. Finally, USA Football delivers top keynote speakers year after year. Here's a few of the keynotes from previous years. Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, PJ Fleck, and Jeremy Pruitt. As an added bonus this year, paying attendees can get access to the advanced tackling system and contact system for blocking and defeating blocks following the event and have a chance to earn the new advanced contact certification. If you're ready to get to work on next season, don't miss out on USA Football's National Conference. Learn more at nationalconference.usafootball.com/podcast. Enter the code PODCAST179 to save at registration.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. My name is Chris Sharp, and I'm your host for this week's highlight show. The Coach and Coordinator Podcast is here to help you lead the next generation of football players. Whether it's a tutorial on implementing new schemes, leadership seminars, or ongoing trends in football, our channel is a resource for you. On this Valentine's Day edition of the podcast, we will take a look back at the best of the best from this week's lineup of shows. This past Monday, we invited the University of Alabama's offensive line coach, Kyle Flood, onto the show. With a vast amount of experience at both the collegiate and the professional level, hear how Coach Flood views the level of play in college football and in the National Football League.
Coach, you've had some experiences where you've been able to coach at pretty much every level. You know, at Delaware, Rutgers, Hofstra, Iona, spent some time with the Falcons, now you're at Alabama. As you look at, I guess, the things that are different at those levels, but also the things that really stay consistent for you as you've moved through the different levels.
Yeah, I will tell you, for years, I always thought that as I moved up, that the players would need me less, or would need coaching less is probably a better way to say that. And it's really not true. What I found is, as you move up, it gets more and more challenging because the players who play at a high level, they want to be coached at a high level. And you're going to the Falcons and being around a guy like Alex Mack, who probably will end up in the Hall of Fame someday as a center, watching the way he went about his business and his appetite for coaching and his appetite for information really made a huge impact on me. And I think it made me a better college coach when I came back to college. And even at a place like Alabama, where we're fortunate to have a lot of talented players, they need coaching. The ones who succeed want the coaching. They want to be coached. They want to be critiqued because they want to be the best. They're highly competitive people.
Now being at Alabama, certainly, a team that not just the sports world looks towards, but, you know, business people look at how that organization is run and just the detail and everything that goes into the culture there. What have you, I guess, been most impressed with as you've spent your time there? I know it's just a year for you.
Yeah, it's about a full year now. I think it's something you know when you go there because everybody's familiar now with what Coach Saban has done and the success that he's had and the standards that he's set. But when you're living it on a day-to-day basis in that building and you're experiencing the day-to-day standards of excellence in every area, not just on the field, but in the training room, in the weight room, in the support for the student athletes, in really every aspect of their life, there is a demand for excellence on a day in and day out basis. And that type of culture, having been a head coach, I totally understand how hard that is to establish that type of culture. And to be in it every day and see what Coach Saban has created there, it's a special place.
I guess, how has it changed you as a coach? What improvements has it made to the way you go about things? I mean, you have a great career here. You spent a long time at this, but every opportunity is a new situation to learn in.
It absolutely is. I don't know that it has necessarily changed me as a coach, but I do think that when you work somewhere as an assistant, you want to work somewhere where the head coach is going to make you better. And I think Coach Saban's drive on a day-in, day-out basis makes everybody on the staff better. And to do that, despite all the success that he has already had, is very unique. And it's why not a lot of places have been able to replicate what he's done in Alabama. So that part has certainly had an impact on me.
Tuesday brought us Dartmouth College's legendary head coach, Buddy Tevens. Coach Tevens has utilized a no-tackling concept in practice for his team in the hopes of protecting his players from injuries. Hear how he uses this philosophy along with the mobile virtual player, or MVP, to help better the game of football.
What we found, and our coaches initially were against it. Don Dobbs, my defensive coordinator, has been exceptional. You know, as a defensive coordinator, he's responsible for the defense, and our initial thought was tackling. You know, the player-on-player contact, head-to-head contact, that creates the greatest opportunity for concussive injury. So to back off that, he was all in. And what we found is technically we improved because the focus was different than what it had been before. And I think, having watched an awful lot of high school and different college practices, there wasn't a whole lot of teaching in terms of specifics of tackling. It was, hey, this live guy, knock him down. And now you can say, hey, I want a left pectoral tackle high. I want a right shoulder tackle mid-level. And actually practice a specific skill set that the guys are going to use with great frequency. And nobody gets hurt, but they get better at the skill set. We're the best tackling team in the league. I'd say one of the best, if not the best, in the country. We average 5 missed tackles a game. They're not knockout shots. And the deal, in my opinion, and what I tell our players, it's not to kill and maim. It's to get a guy on the ground. He's carrying the ball, get him down. We do it effectively, and we do it safely.
Yeah, that mindset, I think, has to shift a little bit in how we think about, you know, tackling, how we think about contact. As you mentioned there, it's still very technical, and we work with a, you know, tackling expert who came from the rugby world, Richie Gray, and he always talks about, you know, don't be butchers, be surgeons. That it is very precise, and as you said, and when you took that aspect out of it, instead of just this, you know, blind blunt force trauma, go get them, knock them down, that when we step back, we are taking the contact out of these drills, that you start to focus on those things, and you have that fine detail now that goes into.
Players have a plan. They're going in. They've done it so often that they know exactly what to do, and they react accordingly. Muscle memory. We hear so much about that. Well, there's a tackle memory as well. And if you practice it, and that's what we tell people, practice it on bags. Especially with young kids, it's not intimidating. A young guy, and I went through this with my own son, first practice ever in pads. He was a shy kid. He's in the back of the line. He's paired with the biggest guy, knocks him silly. Whiplash comes up crying, and that's his entree to football. That's not a good thing for young kids.
No.
It's slow, and I talk about crawl, walk, run, sprint, a progression. So if close quarters on a player, it doesn't hurt. And you can actually fit people in. You start on a bag. You can be in air of your technical expertise and just coach it up and repeat it. And that's my mindset, is look at the little things and then back off to the longer things as time goes on.
We continued our home team series of podcasts on Wednesday. Our guest host, Joel Nellis, invited the University of Nebraska's offensive line coach and run game coordinator, Greg Austin. Coach Austin shared how, at Nebraska, head coach Scott Frost embraces everyone's families. Hear testimony on how family and football can truly coexist.
You've now had the chance to work for Coach Frost for, you know, in two stints, both at the UCF and I see you doing from Oregon. And, you know, some of the questions I typically ask are related to maybe different coaches, but you really have worked for, you know, mainly one guy, at least at the college level. How has he been with guys on staff if they need to go watch their kids' events? Is that a pretty easy conversation to have with him? Are there things that he does to get people, you know, families around the program? Is he a very family-friendly guy with, you know, how he loops that into your schedule? It sounds like it, just based on how your week goes. But if you want to talk a little about how the culture he's created with family in your program?
Yeah, man, it's, you know, family is a family-first culture. You know, Scott, you know, we worked for Chip. Right. So I was at Oregon with Chip. And at the time that we worked for Chip, Chip was not married. And it was so weird how he scheduled, like literally the calendar was made, and the calendar really revolved around guys and their families, you know, whether they had children in this, children in that. Certainly you can't appease everybody in every situation,
yep.
But Chip was so cognizant, especially as a single guy, he was so cognizant of everybody's family time. You know, he was so adamant about getting guys home and, you know, guys pouring into their kids' lives. And guys really kind of, you know, carried that forward. You know, the family dinner thing, that was the Chip idea. You know, that was big on Chip's list. And again, Chip is not, at that point in time, Chip didn't have a family. When he ate, his whole family, you know, he was still a man. you know, it was crazy.
That's hilarious.
But, you know, my mom always says that about my brother, because my brother's not married.
Okay.
She's like, yeah, well, he eats his whole family, you know. Because sometimes he, you know, I'm not going to get onto that. My brother, he's older than me, you know, that whole deal.
Okay.
Whatever. But anyway, so, yes, Scott, man. So, Tony Tuoti, he's our D-line coach. His son recently signed with Nevada. And I'll just give you an example, man. Hey, on signing day, December 18th, all the full-time coaches were at the office. Normal. I mean, we had to be there at what time? At 6 o'clock, right? Because the East Coast guys could sign on the East Coast at 7 o'clock, which would be 6 o'clock our time.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to be there at 6 o'clock. A lot of guys got there 5:30, you know, whatever. That's normal time. No big deal. But there was one person that was not there. I'm like, why is Tony Tuoti not here? He's our D-line coach. Like, what the heck's going on? You know, we signed D-linemen too. So then I completely forgot. Now, Tony's son, Tony's oldest son, he signed this year to Nevada, you know. And I didn't put all of that together until he got back, until he got in the office, you know, about 7:30, 8 o'clock. I'm like, man, you know, I'm like, where was this guy at? Like, he just getting to work or what? And, you know, Scott gave him the, you know, Scott gave him the go ahead and say, hey, man, you know, we got coverage here. You know, we're good. I want you to enjoy that moment with your son. You know, enjoy that moment at 7 o'clock a.m., sitting at the kitchen table and signing with your son, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's just, like I said, that's one example of how Scott approaches the deal.
Thursday's podcast brought us an old guest who has a new gig. Kurt Fitzpatrick came onto the Coach and Coordinator podcast, and soon after it was announced that he is the new coach of Sunny Courtland. Hear Coach Fitzpatrick's philosophy on quarterbacks and how they can utilize their eyes during the game in this preview.
As just an example and illustration for our listeners, I guess talk us through exactly how that works for you. Maybe give us an example of that.
Sure. So let's say you have a 3x1 and you're going to run a base concept for us would be any 3x1, our single receiver, if he's detached, and we call him the X, I think, that's pretty standard. He's going to run a hitch route that converts versus press, versus a tight corner, press or cloud. He's going to convert to the three-man side, three-man concept, a curl concept we run. The outside receiver will run a 12-yard curl, seeking the window inside. The number two receiver will run what we call a middle route, meaning he's going to attack the middle of the field. If the middle of the field's open, then he can run up the middle. If the middle of the field's closed, then he's going to run across the middle. And then number three to the flat. And so our quarterbacks will prioritize. We're going to put a premium on the single receiver. And we can tag that hitch that I talked about.
Right.
We can tag it into a rollover, into a post corner, whatever route we think we need that can attack the best or fits the down and distance the best or the situation. But the quarterback is going to, he's going to prioritize and put a premium on that single receiver side.
Mm-hmm.
And if he likes the look, then he's going to commit to it and throw it. And I You know, he's got to be able to ask himself simple questions. Do I like the X, yes or no? If the answer is yes, then fully commit to it and rip it. We want them to be confident when they make a throw. You know, we don't want their eyes yo-yoing all over the field and, you know, trying to look for a receiver. They need to know what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And if you're uncomfortable with that, if it's gray at all, then work backside or work your eyes across the field. It's not like they're staring at that receiver for long. Like they right. know what a good look and a bad look right. is, and they're going to move their eyes quick. Mm-hmm. But having consistency in the thought process so that they can be consistent and they know we're going to either live in this single receiver world or if I don't love the look. If I don't love the look, then I'm going to work the three-man concept that's called.
And, you know, the way you describe that concept, so if he's starting on, let's say, the ball's on the left hash, your trips are out to the right, he's starting on the left there in his drop. Now his eyes are working across, and you and I talked about the importance of, and you mentioned here, the eyes just not bouncing all over the place.
Right.
So how do you coach him through, and again, provide that consistency with how his eyes work? I think that's the most
yeah.
important part.
Yeah, he's going to scan. So we'll scan our eyes, not to the receiver, but to the area that the receiver is gonna run to. I think if as a quarterback, if you're trying to put your eyes to the actual receiver as he's running, you're gonna be a little bit late on that. So we're working to areas, and that's where trust comes in. Like one of the core values, you gotta trust that the receiver is gonna be where he needs to be. But our eyes will scan. The concept that I called, he's going to look. So if he does not, he's, let's say the free safety who's on that, the boundary safety.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say they're going to play cloud to the boundary.
Right.
And he's off the hash, outside, off the hash. The quarterback will take his eyes from there and scan to the middle of the field and see what's available. And if he likes the space, then he's going to throw it and rip it and commit to it. And if not, then he's going to scan for the curl window. And then to the flat.
To end the week, we went all in on offense with Dan Gonzalez. An offensive mastermind, Dan Gonzalez has served as a consultant for teams across the nation. Hear how his concepts can help revolutionize your passing attack by using a holistic approach to protecting the passer.
Also, in terms of how you protect the passer, how you script, for example, you know, I talk about in this course, talk about how we script like mini series or attack points. And I can tell you that as a throwing game guy, I am always focusing on slowing down the pass rush. And so whether that's, you know, examining your substitution patterns, and typically I know how often you substitute your pass rushers. And if I feel like, you know, your guys are fresh, then there has to be a scripted set of plays where you can throw the ball in quick rhythm and get completions, but not let yourself get into that big negative. You know, I learned from a couple guys that are very influential on me that, you know, you don't necessarily, some of the situations they were in with schools they were at, they would not take a deep shot on first down of a new series. They were going to wait till they were, you know, five or six plays into, you know, a series, going up tempo, and then they take their shot, you know, and that, those kinds of things, no one in the stands would ever know it, right? And obviously the defenses didn't know it either. But the other part of it is sometimes you're going normal tempo, and you know, people start getting tired, and they get near their expected time to come out, and they start trying to tap out. Well, that's when you need to go up tempo, right? And so that's when you really need to go fast. And it's not just about going fast all the time, because then you're predictable. It's not about being in the same formation all the time, like you say. And so there's different ways, and these are all things that I talk about in the course, the different things that we look at. And there's no, you know, necessarily set formula to it, because you know, every team has its individual nuances and matchups that you can take advantage of. But these are just like, you know, ideas that I think if you think holistically, you know, where the number one thing is, as offenses have become more and more quarterback driven in the last few years, if you can keep your guy healthy, then your chances of winning have, you know, have gone up tremendously. Assuming that you're competent in all the other areas, right? But I think that anytime you can keep a stud quarterback healthy, that just, you know, bodes well for your future.
Thank you for tuning into this week's highlight show. Don't forget to like and subscribe the show and to leave us a 5-star review. The Coach and Coordinator Podcast will be back on Monday with more information and more analysis.